Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back. Sports to the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO. Houston Astros lead it 2-1 over Washington in the second inning. So a little fireworks early there. A little offense in what was supposed to be a pitcher's duel early on. I don't think there's any home runs yet. I'm not sure. But they got a little something-something going there. That should be a fun series at minimum. Two teams that are pretty well-built, pretty balanced in their lineup and the way they approach things. Starting pitching first and then kind of go from there. But both teams got some guys to swing the bat as well. So seems like a long time ago that the Twins were part of this foray, doesn't it? I mean, it just, you know, it was just a couple weeks, but if all of a sudden you go, whoa, what happened? Joining us right now is the one and only Kevin Lynch of Gopher Basketball, played in the NBA, played in Europe, does work on Fox Sports, of course, for the Timberwolves each and every year. And we are on the eve, the cusp of a new season, 2019-2020 season for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And Kevin, you and I talk frequently, and I would say that in as best I can remember in recent years, probably – as much uncertainty as we've seen in some respects, because we're not quite sure how this style of play is going to play out. We're not quite sure who's going to step up and be the leader. We're not quite sure how this system is going to be employed or the culture with Gerson Rosas in charge. We know the players involved, but it seems like there's a kind of an uncertain feel about how well they'll execute what it is they want to do right now.
Yeah, and if this roster can fit the style of play that they want to play at. You know, they want to play fast, but everybody tries to play fast in the NBA. So how do you play faster when you've already been trying to play fast? I mean, what does that look like? And does you want to go play small and you want to shoot a lot of threes? Well, that's fine. The team, they needed to shoot more threes, that was for sure, but to what degree are you going to start taking 50 or 60 threes in a game and
yeah, just jacking them up for the sake of getting a bunch up?
Yeah, exactly. And do you have the shooters on this roster to make enough of those threes where you're dangerous offensively? So, and then if you're going to play small, how is that going to affect your defense? So a lot of teams in the playoffs last spring, I don't know if you noticed this or watch much NBA playoffs, Mike, but you know, teams like Denver, Portland, Utah, they went big.
They went big again.
And they had success. And then Philadelphia in the East and Milwaukee in the East, two of the biggest teams in the NBA, were doing damage in the playoffs because they went big. And the Wolves are going to go small. The Wolves had problems keeping teams off the defensive glass last year because they were small. And there's a lot of stuff that's going to unfold, you know, this season for the Wolves, and then it's, you know, I hope it goes well, but I'm a little nervous about this.
I am too, because I want your expert opinion on this. So last spring, new GM, new president of basketball operations, whatever you want to call it, and he declares this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Now, tell me this, in an off season, and you could fill in the blank with Josh Okogie, Andrew Wiggins, Jeff Teague, fill in the blank for whoever you want that's going to be expected to shoot, Robert Covington. What can they do to improve flat out and become better three-point shooters? Do you believe you can have vast improvement if you know that's the mission? Or at some point in time in your career, are you what you are as a shooter?
Good. That's, I mean, when Ricky Rubio was this team's point guard and the team was hiring shooting coach after shooting coach.
Yes, at the professional level, yep.
And then Rubio would put out these videos in the middle of July where he's in a gym and he makes 80 out of 100 NBA threes in some gym in Spain.
Yep.
And you know, it's like you can do all this stuff. And I'm, you know, to answer your question in a simple way, Mike, all these players have to shoot, and they are doing it all summer. That you have to. And so the biggest jump is going to be just the players, you know, working on that shot a lot, every day, all summer, you know. So, the style of play can affect it to some degree, but you know, I was told one time that when it comes to shooting and shooting the basketball in this sport, is you can only make one jump. So, I mean, you kind of break it down this way. You got bad shooters, you have decent shooters, you have good shooters, and you have great shooters. And you can basically only take one step. If you're a bad shooter and you bust your butt and work on it, you could maybe become a decent shooter. You know, but you can't start off a bad shooter and turn into a good or great shooter. That's too many steps away. So does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You only got so much ceiling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, so for this team to go from one of the bottom teams last year in three-point shots attempted, and they did not shoot a very high percentage either, so it just was not much of a weapon. So to expect this team to turn into a good three-point shooting team, even though they're going to be taking a lot more threes, is kind of hard to accept that that's going to happen. So I don't know. I mean, you know, shooting a lot of threes, if they somehow capture lightning in the bottle and start making a lot of threes and taking a lot of threes, then they maybe have something. But I just can't see it happening this year.
Now, that being said, does that mean that they continue to look for more shooters? They say, I mean, are your best off declaring this is our style? Therefore, any player that wants to come and play here, you know exactly what you're getting into. Do you do that at the risk of getting blown out some nights?
Well, that could happen. Yeah, I mean, and you know, that could entice a guy who's a good shooter who wants to play that style, because it can prolong his career or something, or at least it's he's going to a team that can focus on what his strength is. Maybe that will attract certain players to come play for the Timberwolves in the future. But so that's maybe a way to do it. You know, kind of announce to everybody that, hey, this is how we want to play. If you can shoot it, we want you on our team, and that type of thing. So at the same time, your best player, Karl-Anthony Towns, who by the way is their best three-point shooter, but he's also a good post-up player too, so you can't get too far away from doing that as well. You want to make sure you're maximizing what he does too. So this whole movement in three-point shooting is interesting. Plus, you know, you look at how three-point shooting affects the mid-range game and how they've structured practice where the mid-range shots, even if they go in, aren't worth as much. And to me, I'm a guy. I was a mid-range shooter, big time, and it's a beautiful part to the game that unfortunately is kind of going away. So it's going to be interesting to see how many threes they take. Can they shoot a decent percentage where they're effective at it? And if they can't, how are they going to score?
I'll complicate it further. Andrew Wiggins. I mean, your game is similar to Wiggins in some respects, athletic, about the same size, jump high, create shots, all those things. He's a catch-and-shoot kind of a guy. He's a create-his-own game. I don't like to say it, but I've watched him a lot, and he's just if you want to ask him to be a spot-up shooter for three, I don't see it. He needs space. He needs to dribble. He needs to create. But I can't see – he's at his best when he's either going to the basket or has the ability, you know, 15 feet spot up kind of thing. I don't know how – you know, everybody wants to put the weight of the world on Wiggins, in it, which I think is a little unfair. I think they got some other people that need to step up too. But I don't know where this is conducive for him.
I don't even know where to start with Wiggins. I mean, he's a frustration. And I tell you what, last season – let me start with this when it comes to Andrew Wiggins – last season, I was having a conversation with one of our producers, and we just kind of figured out that, hey, because we were getting so frustrated with how he was playing, and we just kind of thought, you know what, we need to lower our expectations of how good Andrew Wiggins is and how good he's going to be. And then, so then the rest of this, after we kind of made this decision, the rest of the season when he played in a particular game, played close to 40 minutes and got you 12 points and took 18 shots to get 12 points, it didn't bother us as much. So, I mean, I think a lot of Wolves fans need to get to that point where you lower
I agree. And I'm not so sure that the management and the coach hasn't gotten to that point.
Well, plus, you know, this is a very layered thing. Plus, you start talking about Wiggins, like how much energy, I get the feeling them going small, them wanting to play fast, them trying to become a three-point shooting team, a big part of that is we got to maximize Andrew Wiggins' game. But how much – I mean, are you going to do everything to
what are you going to give up? Yeah,
to get this guy going, maybe at the detriment of the development of other players on the team. That's a problem at some point, because they've already kind of done this, Mike. They've focused on him. Everybody's talking to him. They're trying to help him. At some point, you got to just say, you know what, Andrew, just go play hard.
Give us what you got.
Give us what you got, and we're going to put our energies and focus into other players to develop them, because he just hasn't taken a big next step, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, and I think maybe they've arrived at that more so than we think. I don't know that for sure, because he does have to be on the floor a lot for this team when you look at the roster, at least right now. I'll tell you the other point, though, that I think is critical. And I'm not talking about them making the playoffs. I'm talking about them being competitive and making it worthwhile to watch. If you're a Wolves fan, I can watch the NBA. I love the NBA. I love whatever team comes through town, the bad teams, the good teams. I just think if you can play at that level, it's a beautiful thing to sit and watch. But that being said, I have no idea what they're going to get out of Jeff Teague, and he is a good point guard when he wants to be.
Yeah, he was hurt a lot last year, and I think – So he missed basically half the season. So, and I think that even when he did play, he was inconsistent when he did play. So, you know, if they, my prediction is if the Wolves exceed expectations and somehow win 35 or 40 games, or even somehow sneak into, you know, potentially making the playoffs, say if the season goes that way, Teague has got to have a career year. I mean,
exactly.
See, he's got to be healthy, and he's got to play well when he's on the floor. And he's been a frustration too. Now, some of it's the injury thing, but at the same time, you know, he's a guy who can go get a shot at times. He can he can score pretty well. He's a veteran point guard. So, yeah, if they somehow have a good year this year, I think Teague is going to be one of the guys playing well.
And, you know, in part, you hate to do this, but I think they're kind of banking on this last year of his contract.
Oh, yeah. He's making $19 million this year, and this is the last year of his deal, and he wants to sign another juicy one next year. So he's going to be – I would imagine I'd be astonished if he doesn't play motivated. Now, does he play well or not? That's a different issue. But he's going to be out there to sign another big contract, and, you know, maybe the team can use his motivation.
You obviously there's always some new players to play. What's the hardest thing for a rookie coming into this league?
Oh man, I think trying to focus on basketball.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I look back on my life and just think, I think the fastest year of my life was as soon as my senior year in college was over, and then I was going to the NBA, big NBA physical down in Chicago, and then they had this big orientation thing for rookies in Dallas, and then the workouts with different teams. You're flying around and working out for different teams, and then the draft, and then the rookie camp in the summertime, and then your rookie year. Everything is new, the money, the attention, the traveling, and you got to remember to focus on basketball too, which is not easy. But then after that rookie year, things kind of slow down, because then there's a new crop of rookies coming in, and now you focus just on basketball. So trying to slow down and keep the focus on getting better and working on your game, I think that's the biggest thing for rookies.
Who are you? What team are you most interested in watching in the NBA this year?
Whoa, that's a good question. I think Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I like what they did as far as who's the big guy that came over from Boston?
I know. Horford.
Al Horford. Yeah. They got Al Horford from Boston.
Big, strong, physical.
Yeah. And then to see, obviously, Joel Embiid's a pretty big talent. And Ben Simmons he's in an important year, too. So it's that's a team that's intriguing to me. I think they're going to represent the East come playoff time in the NBA Finals. And so, I mean, there's a lot of interesting teams. I mean, I think Utah is interesting to me. I think obviously the two Los Angeles teams with the changes there with Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis and Paul George and da da da. But to me, Philadelphia is a team that I'm going to keep my eye on.
Does Denver do much for you? Do you think they're in the right direction based on what they did last year?
Absolutely. Oh yeah, I think so. I mean, to me, if you could go back in time and not make that Jimmy Butler trade and bring that cancer to this team,
yep.
You keep Zach LaVine. You keep that pick that eventually ended up being Lauri Markkanen. You put, you know, LaVine and Markkanen on this team with Karl Anthony Towns and have those three guys as your main players. You're doing – the Wolves would be playing just like what Denver has done the last couple of years, young, keeping a good group of talented young players together. And I think the Wolves would be heading down that path. But obviously trading for Butler and getting rid of LaVine and Markkanen has really hurt this team. And that's a team that, yeah, for sure. I mean, I know some people are predicting Denver is going to be, you know, maybe the first or second seed when it's all said and done in the West. So they got a lot of talent. Yeah, they do.
But you talk about that West. I mean, who knows the Golden State? Who knows the Lakers? You know, is Davis enough to take them? And the Clippers? God, there's some talent in that West.
Well, then, I mean, that's just the you know, the what about Westbrook Houston. Going to Houston? Yeah, what about Utah?
Yeah.
Tell you what, you better watch out for Utah. They're
they just gave
good.
Snyder a big contract extension. Then he was you know, he's coaching the D League, just happy to get work a couple of years ago.
Yeah, now look at him. So, I mean, and then Portland is very good team, too. So, and then there's other teams that are intriguing. Dallas with Porzingis and Doncic, and even Sacramento has quietly stacked up some talent too. So it's going to be a dogfight, man, when it comes to Western Conference basketball.
Yeah. You know, I tell you, the one who would really benefited from small ball, though, had it been in his era, the Dragon.
The Dragon.
Yep. He'd have played a lot longer, you know, officially than he has.
Yeah, the Dragon is he's a street ball legend, Mike.
Yep.
And you need to cherish those rare moments where you get a chance to either watch him play today or you get a chance to converse with him. I'm telling you.
Yep. And one day, it's, you know, I saw the Dragon play. That's what it's going to be.
That's exactly right.
And if the Dragon had come at the right time, he'd have played a long time.
Yeah, you need to hang out with him some more. That's my advice to you.
He's a good man. Kevin, so are you. Thank you so much for giving us some time. I'll see you at the health club soon.
All right, thanks, Mike. Have a good night.
You bet. That reference was to Kevin plays at the health club. He plays two-on-two full court a lot. And it's a great conditioner for him. But who is the Dragon, you ask? Who is the Dragon? I'll explain when we come back.
Sports to the max.
Welcome back. Sports to the max. That ball is gone. Washington Nationals tied up 2-2 with Houston. Who is the Dragon that I referred to with Kevin Lynch there? The Dragon is a unique basketball player. It's a unique skill set. They play two-on-two at the full court at the health club, and it's it's a great workout, and they get lots of good shots in, and Dragon's a really good shooter. The Dragon is the one and only Damon Dragotis of De La Salle fame. In 1985, he helped lead the Islanders to a state championship. And his name just stood out, Damon Dragotis. It just begged for a nickname. And the nickname was perfect. You take Damon and Dragotis and you kind of put them together, and it's somewhere in there you get Dragon. It's just kind of a natural off the tongue. And the Dragon is still in great shape. And the Dragon, I mean, when you got a name like the Dragon, you led your team on the island, you know, the inner city, De La Salle, and you led them to a state championship, then you become kind of legend and folklore. And the Dragon still steps up, and he still has game, and he's still difficult to defend. And you have to be. You have to be offensive-minded to be a street ball legend. You can't just be a defensive specialist. You can't be a guy that you say he anticipates the screen and roll well. That doesn't get you anywhere, not when it comes to street cred. You have to have something about you that just identifies you and stands out. Otherwise, you can't be called the Dragon, and you can't be a street ball legend. You just can't. You're not allowed to be. It can't just be because, well, you hit the open man. The Dragon has to have game. He's got to be able to shoot it. He's got to be able to score in a variety of ways. That's the only way you can live up to that legend. And that's what the Dragon does at the health club when you watch him play with and against Kevin Lynch. The Dragon has an offensive game about him. And it's one that's hard to duplicate or even explain. But you don't need to explain it. not when your name is the Dragon. That's all you got to say. I saw the Dragon play. How'd he look? Oh, he looked great. Did it all. He had this one move where he was going to his left hand. All of a sudden, he stopped and turned and went behind his back to his right, left three guys, wondering what had happened. And the fourth guy broke his ankles, and all of a sudden, the Dragon turned it. You know, the Dragon set up, and he didn't set up. He had a fast break, and the Dragon stops 25 feet away, yells layup, and then shoots a three-pointer on that. That's what the Dragon does, because that's what you have to do when your nickname is the Dragon. State football playoffs are upon us. Tonight, section playoffs started. Quarterfinals for a lot of teams. Tatino Grace is waiting. Their turn will come on Friday. What their legendary coach believes about playing state championship caliber football and playing into November in the state of Minnesota when we come back.
Sports to the max.
Welcome back. Sports to the max. News Talk 830 WCCO. Chilly outside. Must be football playoff weather, huh? Nothing like it if your team's still playing on a November night. Jeff Ferguson knows a whole lot about that. Head coach at Tatino Grace. His football team will embrace the challenge again starting this Friday, and he joins us now. Fergie, you just love it when it gets cold like this and you're still playing football, don't you?
Football weather is better than having it be cold and not playing, Max.
That's right. Yeah. It's bad enough it's cold, but if it's cold and you have nothing to do, that's awful. Do you prepare a lot for that? I mean, over the years, when you've played on every different condition, but when it's a cold night, what philosophically do you do as a coach to prepare them for, to mentally get them ready during the week, to turn it into an advantage on Friday?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, practice is really important. You know, we practiced half the time inside today in the gym and half outside. We get outside some, but you know, practice is critical, and you can, if the weather's really horrible, you can kind of old school go outside and tough it out and feel good about yourself. But I think it's better just to be able to concentrate and prepare. And you do have to get outside some, of course, but I think there has to be sort of a balance with that. And in the game, you know, it's the same conditions for both teams. And prepare for it, dress for it. We always tell our guys,
hey, Jeff, hang on one second. We're going to call you back. Just hang up. We just got a bad connection now. We'll call you right back, okay? Jeff Ferguson, head coach at Tatino Grace, and interested to hear his thoughts, but we just want to – the cell connection was a little bit off there, and once in a while we get that. And we had that with Ron Shira during his, too. I'm sorry, what's that? Well, that was clear. Oh. Okay, well. So the connection with Ron was good. Okay. It's the state football playoffs, and Creighton-Durham Hall just had a big win. Final game of the regular season, 26-20 over Creighton-Durham Hall. They're right where they want to be, kind of heading down the stretch. We rejoined Jeff Ferguson. Jeff, we're just talking about that. You know, to an extent, it's so true, and it's a little bit like when coaches eliminate a contact a little bit. It doesn't mean the kids they don't know what to do on Friday. They still know to hit the person on their side, and whether you practice inside or outside when it's cold, you still know what the task is at hand on Friday night, right?
Yes, I mean small doses, right?
Like, yep.
We need to hit, but we don't need to hit for 2 hours. And we need to be outside, but we don't need to be outside for 2 hours. But, part of it's how you dress, right? Like, we want our kids, there's so much good, cold weather wear now, but.
That's a good point. That's changed over the years, hasn't it?
It has, but then again, I tell our guys, I don't want you to look like the Michelin Man. You're the little kid in Christmas Story where you can't put your arms down to the side because you have three sweatshirts on.
Yeah.
You know, so we help them a little bit with that, and they're fine. You know, kids, they're running around. I'm the guy that gets cold.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when you're those Bermuda shorts in November.
Yeah, you're not going to see me in those, Matthew. I'm sorry.
Hey, you had a big win over Creighton the other night. I saw that Nick Hand had like three picks, huh?
He's a good player. He's a junior, and we're excited about him. Yeah, we love it. It's a good little rivalry game with the Catholic schools, and we had a nice prayer before the game, brought both teams together. And so it's a pretty cool deal when Creighton-Durham Hall plays Tatino Grace. You know, we're both Wesleyan schools formed by the Christian Brothers, and we have a great connection with them, and they obviously have a great program. And I tell you what, they're good. They're better than their record indicates. And
they're going to be a handful for people.
You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday. I won't use his name because I didn't ask him if I could, but he had four kids go through Totino Grace High School. And I asked him how he arrived at Totino Grace as a school. You know, they could have gone to, you know, any of the private schools. And he says, there was just something about the culture in that I thought that Totino Grace reflected society. The demographics of Totino Grace were very much in line with what I, you know, the makeup of society, I thought, in terms of diversification, everything else. It seemed like, you know, they've got everything there. Is that the culture of Totino Grace?
Yeah, that's a great comment. You're talking to a biased guy, Max, because I've lived my life there, right? I went to school there, and our four kids went to school there, and I've been there for 40 years darn near, and there is no better place, in my opinion. It's a happy place. It's a safe place. Kids are challenged. We have great parents. We have great kids. Our staff's incredible. I mean, it is. It's for as long as I've been there, there's a feeling, and I think it came from the brothers and sisters that founded the school, and you know, and I think it's still there today as well.
His comment was, and this is to take nothing away from any other school, but he said, I always look at the student parking lot. You know, I do this too whenever I'm out covering stories. I always like to look at the student parking lot because it tells you some things. And he said, I love the fact that you saw nice cars, but you also saw old pickup trucks and four-wheel drives and everything else at Totino Grace. And he said that told me something about the makeup of the student body.
We are, you know, there's some people that have some means to send their kids there.
Yep.
There's some families that sacrifice unbelievably to send their kids there, and I respect that so much. You know, one of the cars he's talking about that's a junker is mine, Max.
I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah, we'll start off with that. But no, it's you know, I think diversity is you want your school environment to kind of be a little microcosm of society, and we're that, and we work hard at being that, and that works well for us.
In winning state championships, what did you learn about the most important parts and pieces of playing in October and in November?
You know, the great thing about football, it's a team game. You know that, Maxie. You're an athlete, and you were an athlete. And, you know, maybe you're still an athlete. But
I think so, but nobody else does. But anyway.
Right. Yeah. It's the ultimate team game. And so the sum of the parts is not as, you know, it's the whole team is much more important than the individual. You can play against a team that has, you know, some great individual players, but if you play as a team and if you execute, it's all those things in football, right? It comes down to, you know, execution, and it comes down to care and concern and love for your brother. You know, it comes down to your trust in your coaches and your trust in your teammates, and we're blessed because I think we've had that, and we have that this year.
The other part of it in football is, you know, generally speaking, you don't know until it's in your rearview mirror, maybe. But I've always thought that good coaches and veteran coaches don't panic early in the season because they really understand football more than any other sport. It's what you're playing like at the end of the year. And if you can get, you know, because you might have to tinker a little bit and a guard might become a tackle or a tackle might become a defensive lineman. And you know, obviously you want to stay away from injuries, but it's amazing in the team concept, what you're talking about, the improvement that can be created in just 3 weeks or 1 month.
Boy, that's amen to that. There's so many moving parts, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love all sports, but, you know, the offense, the defense, all the different special teams, you know, the importance of field position. There's just so many pieces to it, and that's what really makes it fun, I think, for coaches and for kids as well.
How has it, you know, since you started, how has it changed in terms of the complexity? I mean, because of 7-on-7s, are you allowed to be more complex once you get to the season?
You know, I don't know if it's so much 7-on-7s, but it is way more complex. And the coaches we face are so good. Yeah, you know, and I'll say particularly at the 6A level. You know, we played at the 5A level as well, and coaches are great there as well. But week in and week out, you're playing people who really work hard to prepare. And now you're sharing film. You know, there's a library of film you have on people, and there's all the technology, and kids have their iPads, and you can break it down and give them computer reports and, you know, do all the things, formation tendencies, you know, down and distance, vertical and horizontal field position, as much information as you want.
Whoever signed at the high school level. I mean, you and I remember the days where you had one guy that brought the film in to be processed,
right,
and then you worked off of that all week.
Y-Fox, you know.
Yeah, everybody went to Y-Fox,
Everybody would just hang out at the Market Barbecue and wait until the film was developed, and, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning or something.
And we thought that was pretty high end.
thought it was pretty high-end back there, but now you can sit home on your iPad or your computer, and kids can do the same thing. They can have their phones. You can text them all kinds of information. You can log on and see how much film your kids are watching. And hopefully they're spending more time on their homework than they are watching film. But they have to do a little bit of that as well, a little bit of film study. So, you know, the scouting reports that you give kids, you know, we spend the weekend, and when we roll around to Monday, our kids get, you know, 20 pages of offensive and defensive scouting report, and, you know, review film with them. So we're spending actually maybe less time on the field. Well, for sure, less time on the field than we used to back in the day, and more time, you know, we film practice. A lot of people do, of course. You film it, you go in, you watch it, and you don't necessarily need as many plays. And then you correct it, and you try to get it corrected before the game.
You know, I asked Mike Zimmer the same question today. I said, you know, in a short week like this for them when they're playing Washington, does that put a premium on guys at their home film study? And he said, you know, what I do is, he says, I check out, because just what you said, you can tell on the iPads. I don't know if people know this or not, but the head coach of an NFL team checks to see how much his players logged in and watched film while they weren't at practice. He can do that. Technically, he can do that. So he says, I watch, see how much they studied it, and then I ask them questions the next day, because I know who's going to know the answers and who doesn't based on who studied it and how they studied it. And so I quiz them, and basically I already know what the answers are going to be based on how much I watched them log in and how much they studied the film. It's kind of a fascinating process, isn't it?
Well, it just is. The other night, you know, I was watching Tom Brady, of course. You know,
yeah.
He's a different genius than Einstein.
Yeah. You know,
but every bit a genius, as is Belichick, and you just watch those guys. And I watch Brady, and what is he seeing? What is he seeing that other quarterbacks aren't seeing? And it just seems like he never gets hit, rarely, or hit hard.
Yep.
You know, he just knows where to go with the ball, and it just trickles down from the pros to the college to high school. It's fun stuff, but it certainly has become a more complicated game than it was when we played.
You know, the other part is, and I don't know if this can exist at the high school level. I don't know if you can teach a kid this by the time he's 18 years old. But, you know, I like to study Brady as well. And one of the things, I watched him last year in the Super Bowl in particular, is that he's got the patience and probably the supreme confidence, not only just to avoid getting hit, but part and parcel with that, to throw the ball away when it's not there, or to check down to something that's really safe. And in so doing, he doesn't turn the ball over. And I'm not saying he's satisfied with that. Obviously, he wants to continue every drive. But there's something about a quarterback that can learn to live to see another day. I don't know. Can you implement that at the high school level?
Gosh.
Can you teach that?
Yeah, you know, we tell our kids sometimes it's more about avoiding disaster.
I know, and you hate to think that way, because you always want to have your foot on the gas pedal. But in football, it's just so important you don't turn the ball over.
It is, and not even just turn the ball over. You know, it can be at any position.
Yep.
Not just the quarterback position.
Yeah, the extra yards, the whatever, right?
Yeah, you need to avoid disaster and live to play for another day, another down. And sometimes, you know, making those – it's so much about decision-making, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's really a fun part of it. But I love to, you know, it's interesting coaching guys' eyes. You know, today at practice, I was on the other side than I normally am, looking at our guys' eyes and looking at what they're watching and talking to them about their eyes. And, you know, what is Brady seeing? That's what I want to know. Because he sees so much prior to the snap, pre-snap, and then immediately after the snap. And, you know, when they study these guys in college, they can hide them and weight them and see how fast they are and how far they can throw. But there's something about the brain, right?
Like, the other day in the Viking game, they cut over to Zimmer on the sideline right before the ball was snapped, and he's yelling, pass. And he was saying that completely based on the formation. He knew exactly what they were going to do. And obviously that's film study and that's everything else. But he said pass, and you go, how does he know that? And sure enough, they fake the handoff. It's a play action pass, you know?
Yep. He's got the tendencies. He studied it. But, yeah, and then there's something about how fast your brain works, right?
Yes.
You know, my brain works slow.
Mine too.
I'm sure of that. But some of these guys, they can go from A to B to C really fast. And, you know, I think that's probably why, with all the money the NFL has, I don't know what the percentage of getting the draft picks for quarterbacks right is. It's certainly not 100, and it may not be 50.
Well, yeah, not to mention the fact that a lot of them are the great ones are in the lower rounds or the mid rounds.
Yeah, what was Brady, like 6 or 7 or something?
Yeah, but across, you know, the Vikings don't have, I believe I have this correct, they have one first-round pick on their entire offense, and that's their center.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So at that level, with all the money and all the resources they have, it's still a crapshoot. And a lot of it, I think, is above the neck, you know, the stuff that is harder to measure to combine.
Yep. Hey, Jeff, always enjoy it. Could go all night with you, but thank you so much. Good luck in the playoffs, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, we'll see you maybe at J.D. Hoyt soon, huh?
You got it. Anytime is a good time there. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Maxie. Take care.
Yeah, ran Jeff at J.D. Hoyt's not long ago. Just like I say in the commercials, you run into people, and they're just people you know and people that are fun to kibitz with. And Fergie's certainly one of them. Henry Lake sets the stage for what is an action-packed 4 hours next.
Sports to the max.
Henry Lake coming up next.
Man, you're taking me back here. Hold on. Is this your idea with the Janet Jackson?
I got no control
nasty.
Over music anymore.
Nasty. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Susan's a nasty woman out
no
here.
No longer let me pick my music out. I just go with the flow.
Hey, that was a pretty good track there. I'm sure you're a Janet Jackson fan.
Yeah, I like Janet
Jackson.
Okay,
okay. All right.
But, Max, it's because you play Glenn Campbell.
I'm not saying why they won't let me pick my music anymore. I'm saying they won't let me pick my music anymore. Brady Belichick, the greatest combination coach player that we've ever seen. I just thought about that when we were talking.
You talking about in all of sports?
Yeah. Combination.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. The other one I was thinking of clearly was Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan.
Yeah, except Jackson.
But then he did it again. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, so that's. I got the best one for you. Best combination of would you say
coach and player, star player, coach.
I got the best one ever. Bill Russell.
Russell and Auerbach?
Russell. Didn't he win a championship when he was coach player?
Did he win one as a player coach?
I'd have to double check.
Cubsy, can you get on that?
But
he was a player coach.
That would top it, though.
I think he was one of the last player coaches because they said, I'm not sure this works so well.
I know, man.
Can you imagine that?
I know. You would just have a job forever. You'd be like, I won you a championship, and I played and coached.
I'm going to go sign a contract. Yeah, let me get that contract.
You can't run me out of here. Hey, how about I just be player, coach, and GM?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And they'd take it if they could, a lot of those jeepers. Yeah,
but I'm with you. I think that it's probably Belichick and Brady. Is that who you came up with?
I can't even think of anybody else that really comes close in terms of together for that long that did that many things. You know. I mean, I'm just talking off the top of my head now, but I'm just saying I can't even think of – because I thought a little bit about Jackson and Jordan, but then you know Jackson moved on and had a lot of success. And
yeah, when you go to Kobe and Shaq, you're gonna be pretty well off.
Yeah. So, what do you got coming up?
Hey, I got a great interview that we'll do with Dean Blandino. He's gonna join us from Fox Sports. You know, when it comes to officiating, they've been under the microscope more, it seems like, this year than ever before.
Tell me about it. We had Bernie Kukar on and went national.
You did, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I felt bad.
You had him
for
on
Bernie.
Last week. That was a great job by you. Yep.
But everything he said was right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's get New York straightened out on this, you know?
I know, man. Yeah. Is it they are under the microscope now more than ever? It just seems like, you know, when you look at it from the perspective of officiating, they've always, I mean, the games don't matter more now than they did years ago. It's just there's so much more to everything, it just seems like, because there's social media, there's so much that you look at in terms of replay.
The thing Bernie pointed out, which is a good point, was these guys all want to make the playoffs. So their grades are being graded by New York, and New York's saying, you got to call this. So then they start calling that because they want to make the playoffs, you know?
Yeah.
But it might not be in the best interest of the game, you know?
No, I'm with you. And one of the questions that I'll have for Dean is I want to ask him, you know, quite frankly, does he think that there's going to come a day where
Russell won two as a player coach?
See, that's it. That's it.
How do you argue that?
The GOAT.
All right. Henry, you take it away from
there.
Right. Henry Lake next in CCL.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.